Eliza Skinner on the BBC World Service. And alongside Paralympian Scout Bassett and BBC Athletics commentator Ed Harry, this is On the Podium, where amazing athletes explain how they do it. All of which leaves me wondering if they're even the same species as me. But that's a mystery we might never solve. It's not a science podcast, so I don't know how they do it. That's what I'm saying. Now, last time we talked about the best sports films ever made. This time, I want to know who would play you in the Hollywood adaptation of your sports life.
I've given this some thought. They'd have to be British, and mainly because I just want to meet him. I would like to be played by Tom Holland, who's the current Marvel Cinematic Universe Spider-Man, because I think that would be really cool. And yeah, and we'd all get to meet Tom Holland. He wouldn't need to be aged very much because I'm still, you know, frankly stunning. But I think Tom Holland could do that all the way through. I'm not sure what the plot would be in my sports movie, but yeah, Tom Holland's playing me, whatever we choose to write.
Ed, I see the resemblance. That makes perfect sense to me.
Oh, you can come back. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
It's just right on the nail.
Well, what about you, Scout?
I already know this answer. I've thought about it. She's actually a British actress. Gemma Chan.
Okay.
Gemma Chan is understandably much taller than I am, so I don't think that would work out too well, but she's beautiful. I'm not saying our beauties are not, we're not fishing here, okay? But the point is, I love her. She's also one of the main characters in Crazy Rich Asians, and I feel like I identify with her in a lot of ways because she's very like socially conscious. But for the longest time, I didn't know she was British. So I started following her on Instagram and heard her do an interview because I've only seen her in the movies. And in the movies, she doesn't have a British accent, right? So I was like, oh, she's British. I like that even more because I love British people.
Me?
Yes. Who would
play me? Oh, well, it would be weird to work me into a sports film. So I'm going to go with Aubrey Plaza. I think we could have an Aubrey Plaza play me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you guys aren't buying it. I'm going to say Jenny Slate then. Jenny Slate?
Okay.
Still not buying it. Wow.
Well, no. I'm not familiar with these names. I need to like Google them.
We're just too populist in our tastes of things. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Do you guys have a... No, I can't ask you to pick because then you'll say somebody that I'll be like, what? You think I look like that person? Unless it's Chris Evans, because I would be like, what? Yeah. I see it, though, you know, spiritually. Okay, time to meet our guest. Ed, who's on the podium?
Our guest today is a world record-breaking swimmer who set that record winning Paralympic gold in Tokyo for Team USA. Her victory there in the 400 meters freestyle came at her first Paralympics. Our guest lost all usable vision at the age of 14, but at the age of just 17 last year, she was winning not only that Paralympic gold, but a bronze as well. Anastasia Pagonis, welcome to On the Podium.
Hi, thank you guys for having me. I'm really excited to be here. How are you?
We're good. We're so excited that you're here. Can't wait to get to know you a little bit more. And to do that, we have some photos from your social media, and we're going to take a look at him. Ed, what's our first photo?
This is a classic. This is We Are on the Podium, and this is you on the podium at the Tokyo Paralympic Games, holding up your bouquet and mascot in one hand, and that gold medal is in your other hand, and you're biting the medal. I never know why athletes do this. I don't know whether it's the photographers or checking it's real. I don't know. But you look like you've achieved your mission, and you look like it's beginning to all sink in. What were the emotions chewing on the medal on the podium?
Actually, the funny thing is that the photographers didn't even tell me to do that. I was like, okay, I'm biting the medal. Because I know like Phelps bites the medal. Everyone bites the medal. So I'm like, I'm biting the medal and then I'm going to kick the medal. So that was my method.
I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And just hearing like the national anthem and everything around you, it's very overwhelming, but it was a very special moment. I don't cry over anything, and I was tearing up. I'm not going to lie. I was.
Were you surprised, or were you pretty confident that you had a good shot?
You know what? I was confident and surprised all at once. We'll make that make sense.
Okay.
I know that I put the work into it and it was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But no matter how hard you work, either way, it's still a surprise because you don't know how hard other people are working.
That's true.
What were your expectations going into 2021? So you would have had like your 17th birthday or in May of that year. Then you've got your trials races to get you to the Paralympic Games. When you began last year, what would have made you happy at the end of 2021? Was it, I must win a gold medal, or is it, I just want to get there? I just want to experience this.
I mean, at first my goal was making it to Tokyo. My goal was making it to trials even. And I swam at trials and I did very well. And then I was announced to the team, which was so exciting. And once I was announced to the team, my goal was to make it back from Tokyo alive and well. I was like deathly nervous going into Tokyo. So I was like, you know what? If I make it home, that will be enough for me. I will be overly happy. And it's really good. I have very supportive family members. So they were like, just go and have fun. Like they weren't expecting anything from me, which I think was very helpful.
What were you nervous about?
I mean, just like going there, being away from my family for 6 weeks. I mean, it's very hard when you can't see what's going on around you and you're in a different place that you're not aware of. It was just very confusing for me. But I was with my best friend who was my roommate and she took very good care. Well, we took care of each other.
I thought you were about to throw her under the bus. She took very good care of me. Well, okay care. She took kind of good care of me.
We fell down a few flights of steps together, but it's a little bit.
So we kind of pulled each other through it. It was the blind leading the blind.
You get to use that phrase in such a different way.
Talk us through when you would have first gone to see a doctor or got a medical opinion on where your sight was. How old were you when it was first becoming an issue?
I was diagnosed when I was 11, and it was something that kind of a mom would only notice. Because for me, it was my normal. I just thought that, oh, this is just how everyone sees, you know, like nobody can see that great anyway. A few months later, I ended up losing all of my central vision. So every time I lost my vision, it was in like big jumps. And then at 14, I lost all my usable vision. And after like 13 hours at the doctor's, I was diagnosed with a genetic disease and autoimmune retinopathy. So my immune system thinks that my retina is bad and pretty much eats it up. That's how my mom explains it. I'm very lucky. Very lucky.
I imagine, though, how, I mean, it's probably, there's positives and negatives. On one hand, you have a reference for things, right? Because you at one point had your vision. But then, you know, just as people that, you know, maybe experience limb loss later on in life, it's that presents its own challenges where, you know, you've known a life before, you know, you had before you lost your vision and now losing it. I'm sure mentally that journey is probably the bigger challenge more so than the physical.
Yes, definitely. I was in extreme depression and it was very bad for about 8 months. I was in outpatient therapy and it was to the point where I was in bed all day, getting up to even go to the bathroom, felt like a marathon. And my parents were making it so that I had one smoothie a day because I couldn't eat. Like I just didn't want to do anything. And I was thinking that if I was going to be like this, then what was the point of me even being here? I was just going to be a burden on everyone. But with lots of help from my family and my therapist and just an amazing support system, I was like, no, like I'm not being stuck in this place. I'm going to make the best of it. And then I kind of got out of that funk. I started social media and making fun of myself, which really helped me. And I think it's helping other people because they're kind of seeing that you don't have to put this stereotype on blindness.
We have a picture of you. It's a couple of pictures, actually. First of all, it's you behind the wheel of a car saying, me driving, I wish. And then it is actually you on a tandem bicycle with your father, and he's at the front and you're obviously in the seat behind. And I know you've used this hashtag, this is blind, as well. How important is it to not just kind of debunk stereotypes, but to kind of work through things using your social media and to show people that this is not necessarily what they think it might be, not being able to see?
Yeah, exactly. I really like the way you put that. Yeah, I think that breaking down stereotypes is so important. I feel like Hollywood put this image of blindness where you walk around like a zombie, you have your dark sunglasses, and that you can't see anything. And I think that that's just what people think it is. And I'm trying to show everyone that, no, this isn't what it is. I can do things. I can be an elite athlete. I can wear makeup. I can dress cute. I can be an influencer. And just breaking that down and showing them, maybe not driving.
You've had such a huge presence on social media, and one of the things I really like about what you do is you talk about your everyday life and experiences, and you sort of do these tutorials of what it's like for you to swim in a pool blind and put on mascara and all these really everyday things that most people don't even think twice about how they go about it. And I'm just wondering, is that a form of activism for you in some ways of being able to show that?
Yeah, I want to show people that this is how I do things. And maybe if there's someone else out there that's visually impaired, I could show them how to do things. And also, I want to show like the haters how stupid they sound. They're like, how do you eat? I don't know. I take the fork and I put it on my, like, what? You sound so dumb. Like, what? I want to show them, yeah, like, this is actually, like, hard for me. Like, you wake up in the morning, you grab your toothbrush and you put your toothpaste on it, like, if I just squeeze the toothpaste, it's going to be everywhere because I don't know how much is coming out. Now, like, I know the feel of how much I'm putting out, but I used to have to put it on my finger and then put it on my toothbrush. So little things that, like, people don't really understand.
You do a lot for your audience through social media. And I'm wondering, like, what does your audience do for you? How do they make you feel?
I love the support that everyone gives me. I think it's amazing. I think that my support system, like, my social media base was more excited when I won gold than I was excited, so that was pretty exciting. I feel like it's an outlet for me, honestly. I think that making fun of myself and having my quote-unquote dark humor kind of, like, gets me through the tough times. I remember, like, I accidentally put mascara on my eyebrows instead of eyebrow gel, and I was, like, literally having a mental breakdown. But I'm like, I'm going to make a TikTok on this. This is so stupid. And it made me laugh.
Well, yeah. You're 8 steps ahead of me as far as eyebrow gel. I have no idea what I would even do with it.
If you had eyebrows to the point that I do where they stick straight up.
You don't know this, but I do. I've got some serious eyebrows here. I just let them go free and wild. I can't tame them. But you're inspiring me. I might have to try to get into it.
Yeah. I thought that I'd have to use like Gorilla Glue to keep them down, but this one's pretty strong.
You know about that girl who did that, right?
I know.
Yeah, she glued her hair down with Gorilla Glue. You know what? We're all muddling our way. We're all learning as we go.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Sort of a tangent, but roast humor has had sort of a resurgence in comedy. I'm a comedian, and I have a hard time with the roast stuff because I'm like, oh, I don't want to make somebody feel bad. But in talking to all these roast joke writers and roast comedians, they talk about how making fun of each other makes them feel accepted, that they're like, I don't feel like I have to hide anything that I'm insecure about or concerned about is out there on the table. Everybody sees it. We're all laughing about it and it feels accepted.
Yeah. That's why I kind of love being like in the Paralympic movement. When we were in Tokyo, it's kind of like, whose leg is sitting over there by itself? Yeah. Oh my goodness. This was awful. Okay. Story time. So in Japan, so there's like 50 buttons on the side of the toilet and the bidet button right next to the flush button.
Oh, those are different directions.
I shot up and then it's shooting all over the bathroom because I don't know how to shut it now. So I'm screaming in the bathroom. The girl with one leg doesn't have her leg on, so she's hopping. It was a scary situation. It was frightening.
Well, it's like, you know, people, again, in comedy, talk about, you know, not wanting to be ableist in your humor, but the point of the joke isn't what you can't do, but just like living your life and it's normal. And you guys are doing this with each other. It's hilarious and beautiful.
I have a confession. I couldn't make those toilets work either because I had one in my hotel room in Tokyo when I was there for the Olympic Games. And it was like the Starship Enterprise. I had no idea what half of these things did. And I couldn't ask anybody because it was during time of COVID. So you couldn't. There was nobody around the hotel and you probably wouldn't want to ring up reception and say, teach me how to use the bathroom. So yeah, it was, I feel exactly what you're saying there.
So you mentioned also your dark humor. And you've mentioned, you know, being in a dark place and kind of wrestling with these quote unquote negative feelings, you know, darker feelings. It sounds like you have given yourself permission to feel bad and move through it to get to feeling good. Does that feel right?
Definitely. I still struggle with anxiety and depression every day. Just little things frustrate me. Like, it's 11 o'clock at night and I really want Sour Patch Kids and I can't drive myself to the store and my whole family's sleeping. What do you do? And then you get all in your head like, ugh, like, why me? This. And you just kind of got to like push through it and make the best of it. I learned that it's okay not to be okay. And that's something that I wasn't really understanding, but who wants to be normal? Ew. Like,
I don't know how many people actually are normal. What is normal?
Yeah, right?
When did you first hear about the Paralympics? And when you first heard about it, was that something that you wanted to be a part of? And I'm just wondering what your initial impression was about that.
I loved it. I thought that I was going to be with like my people, quote unquote, I guess. And kind of just getting into it and being able to compete against people who are like me. I really loved it. It made me feel special, kind of normal in my own way, if that makes sense.
Perhaps a sense of belonging.
Yes, exactly.
I was wondering, were you always a swimmer? Did you grow up swimming or what, did you find it later in life?
Yeah, so I always grew up at the beach. My family are big beach people, so I always knew how to swim. But I was originally a soccer player. I loved soccer. But losing your vision in balls, it's just not the best thing.
Not good for precision.
And I got into swimming, and right when I got in the pool, I fell in love with it. It was just amazing.
So the swimming was part of your journey with blindness?
Yes, definitely. Right when I started to lose my vision, I got in the pool, and at that point, I was just legally blind, so I could still see a majority of the world. And then once I lost all my usable vision, I kind of had to stop swimming. I was on a team and they just weren't willing to help me or honestly do anything for me. So I ended up leaving.
I guess you wanted to be in the pool. You wanted to do what makes you happy. But what were people around you saying and doing that was making you feel the opposite way?
I was just being told that I was faking and that I was a liar and that none of this was real. And I needed tappers when I was swimming, which is what I use now. So it's pretty much like a pole with a pool noodle on the end of it because I'm not able to see the wall. So I need someone to tap me so that I know that the wall's coming up. Definitely a big trust thing. There's like only 3 or 4 people that I will let tap me.
Yeah, they can't look at their watch, can't glance away.
A lot of trust, yeah. And pretty much the coaches refuse to do that. And I have broken lots of fingers and stuff. And they just refused to help me. At one point, which was actually our breaking point with the team, I dove into the water and I got very disorientated. And I started like throwing up in the pool and I couldn't find my way to the other end because I was just very confused. And I got out of the water and started throwing up. And they were screaming at me to get back in the pool and that this had nothing to do with my vision and they wouldn't even like let my parents come see me. So we were like, okay, yeah, no.
Oh my God, that sounds awful. I'm so sorry.
People are terrible. They just don't understand. They're very ignorant.
And we don't want you to mention who these people are because.
I do. No, I'm kidding.
Let's call them out right now.
I'd like to have a conversation with these people. This is not okay.
Is a part of you when you were holding that gold medal, I know it's joy for everything you've achieved and the people around you have achieved, but was part of you thinking, do you know what? I really wish I could go back 2 or 3 years and just wave this medal at those people.
Oh yeah, this is going to sound awful, but I'm actually like very close friends with the people that own the pool that they swim at, and they put huge banners in there congratulating me. So that felt great.
It's funny how you become a Paralympian, you win a medal, and everybody comes out of the woodworks. That was part of your life, isn't it?
That's so weird. My mom said, we're going to come out. They're going to come for you.
Listening to On the Podium with me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry. With us today is Paralympic gold medal swimmer Anastasia Pagonis.
I imagine that a lot of people would find it, I don't know, overwhelming to be losing a sense of the world that you live in and entering kind of another world of like underwater and in the pool all the time. Was that challenging or was it somehow helpful?
I needed to get through kind of like that depression, anxiety, dark time, kind of pull through that before I could get into the pool again. But once I got back into the pool, it was very frustrating for me. I just didn't understand how I was going to do this. I was crashing into everything all the time. Diving off the blocks was literally the scariest moment of my life. But my coach just like pushed me off and then I was fine after that. And I was like, oh, okay.
friendly push.
Yeah, just baby push, it's fine. And definitely took baby steps to figure out how this was even gonna work. But now it's my happy place, it's where I feel free, it relieves my anxiety, and yeah.
How wrong has it sometimes gone, and what happens when it does go wrong?
Oh, it goes wrong.
Gosh,
one of the first times I was diving off the block, I was like so confident myself, just so confident. I dive off and I'm swimming as fast as I possibly can. And instead of going straight down the middle, I'm going completely sideways because there was no lane lines. There was just my lane line and I went under it and I smashed into the concrete wall and I chipped the bone in my arm.
Ah!
That was exciting.
You said before that you have to have a lot of trust in your tappers and your team. It sounds like you also have to have a lot of trust in yourself and not just your ability to do these things, but to like get through them and fix whatever happens. I can't imagine doing that stuff and not being super cautious and slow and scared the next time. How do you do that?
I think that like you can't even like trust yourself. It's just kind of not having fear of it and kind of just going for it.
Like you'll handle whatever happens. We just saw a picture of you and your dog.
His name is Radar. How iconic.
It's a beautiful picture. You're standing on the pool deck. You're in your swimming costume. Radar is not in a swimming costume, but he is sitting at your feet. How important is Radar? And when did you two first meet? What was that like?
Oh, he's my best friend. So Radar is actually the New York Islanders hockey team's puppy with a purpose. So they pretty much raised him. I like to say that he went from the ice to the pool. And the Guide Dog Foundation is where he came from. They have been nothing but amazing for me. He honestly changed my life. I feel like I have my independence back now. And I used to have to like go around like holding my mom's hand. And now I'm independent. Now I can go down the street and get coffee with him and like do our own thing. And I feel like it just brings a better vibe than like a cane. Because I feel like when you go out with a cane, people are like, oh, it's a blind girl. But when I go out with a dog, they're like, oh my God, it's a puppy.
Well, there's also, I think, a little bit of like, stay out of her way with the cane. We don't want to mess up her system. But with the puppy, they want to come right to you.
It has its positives and its negatives.
He's very cute. I know that's not what it's about, but he's a real cutie pie. How does he feel about the pool?
Oh my goodness. He loves it. I'm not going to lie. He might not like the pool, but my coach kind of bribes him and gives him peanut butter every time he goes to practice. So, like, Radar, want to go to the pool? And he'll, like, charge down the steps and be sitting by the front door. So, is it the peanut butter or the pool?
Does he know when he's at work and when he's not, or is he just always a little bit of both?
Yeah, he knows when he's working and when he's not. He's like a normal puppy when he doesn't have his harness on. So when his harness is on, he knows that it's time to work and he's gotta be all ready. He's very serious. And like, if I'm telling him to cross the street, I'm like, Radar, forward. He's like, I'm going to the crosswalk. And he'll walk me, it's out of the way, to go to the crosswalk. I'm like, I'm not going to yell at him because, like, he's doing his job. Like, he's just being a smart boy. But I'm like, okay.
How important was meeting your current coach, the one that's guided you to your gold medal? What was swimming like around about the time you lost your sight? And what was going wrong? And how did the coach you have now help put some of those things right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I was a swimmer before. And then I had to stop swimming. And then I kind of had to learn all over again. So it was very hard for me. And I felt like I was like a baby learning how to swim. It was terrible. So I found this coach and I went and I had one practice with him. And to say the least, it was a show. We were both like, yep, nope, this isn't going to work. Go our separate ways. That's it. But he saw something in me for some reason. And he actually decided the next day that he blacked out his own goggles. So he took duct tape and put it on his goggles and tried to swim. And he called me that day and he said, "We're going to do this. I figured out a way to teach you how to swim, and we're going to figure this out together, and we're going to do this." And 3 years later, I swim in Tokyo. Well, 2 years later.
Anastasia, with your social media presence, your TikTok, a lot of it is fun and light, but you do a bit of modeling, you do influencer stuff, you do tutorials. And I'm just wondering, with all of that, what are you hoping to achieve by the influence that you have?
Inclusion. I mean, I think that inclusion is coming a long way with modeling and companies and things like that. They have different types of body types and stuff like that. But when they go for a Paralympian, they want to go for someone who has a visual disability. So someone who's missing their arm, someone in a wheelchair, someone who's missing their leg, not someone like me who kind of just looks like the average everyday girl. So I think that's kind of important to get out there too.
I was just going to say that it seems like a really great message for everyone about not assuming anything about anybody else, be it their abilities or their interests or anything. Like, you never know. Get to know somebody instead of thinking you can tell from the outside.
Exactly. I like how you guys are like very educated. Sometimes I do like interviews and stuff or podcasts and they just are the wrong things.
Thanks. Yeah, we've got an interesting triangulation of abilities here and knowledge. Yeah, experience. Exactly.
You've won a gold medal at the age of 17. Where do you go from here? Many, many, many more Paralympic Games, or what do you want to achieve in the immediate future and the long term future?
The immediate future is just try and get myself to practice today. And my long term goals are hopefully Paris, maybe LA. Kind of just taking baby steps with it. Whatever makes me happy.
You said getting to practice. What is your practice schedule?
Oh, it's right terrible. Now. Right now, my practice schedule is a little bonkers. But usually I practice between 8 and 9 times a week. But right now it's kind of get in when you can.
Are you swimming on a college team or just with a college team?
I'm trying to swim on a college team, but it's kind of a little bit crazy. We're not making any progress. They're pretty ignorant with someone with a disability who's an athlete. So it's been a little confusing for them and frustrating for me.
Resistance about you joining the school swim team. I'm assuming it's probably not resistance about you going to actual school there, but more related to being part of the swim team.
Yeah, so I am going to school there right now. I'm just not swimming on the team. Yeah, there's like restrictions and stuff. Since I lost my vision less than 4 years ago, I'm not fluent in Braille and I can't read. So my goal is to do like 9 credits a year instead of 12, which is the minimum for NCAA. But they told me that I can't swim unless I'm going to graduate in 5 years, which just isn't possible for me because it takes me a lot longer to do things because I'm not fluent in reading or Braille.
I'm kind of happy in some ways to hear that the issue isn't as it was, you know, for those number of months when you were 14 with people that didn't appreciate what you needed in the pool. But it sounds like a different kind of battle to teach and show the administrators of a college how you have to learn now you're at that college, which I guess is frustrating in a different way.
Everything is frustrating. Everything is a fight. Anything that I want to do, for some reason, there's just a battle that has to go down. My mom is my little fighter. She's just that little person in front that's up there ready to fight anyone. So she's very good. And she helps me get my stuff done.
Yeah, it sounds like you have an amazing support system, but also that you have made peace with having obstacles, that just because something gets in your way doesn't mean you shouldn't fight past it. You just fight through it.
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating. A lot of crying and a lot of anger. We're going to get through it.
Yep. You've gotten through a lot of stuff already. So why not the next thing?
Exactly. Bring it on.
Well, we are super excited to continue following your journey and wish you continued success and, you know, eager to follow what is happening currently with this NCA situation. And I know that you have a great team and with your activism and the platform that you have, I feel very confident that you're going to be able to create some change there. So we've just loved having you on. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest. And again, all the best to you.
Thank you so much. And thank you guys for having me in this. I had a lot of fun.
Another dud of an interview.
That was fantastic.
I like there was a hashtag on her social, which is hashtag this is blind, and there's loads of different things that she's doing. And then I just feel that we've just kind of got a full explanation of the hows and the whys and the little things and the big things. And the big things are really big, aren't they? Barriers she finds in front of herself, but she's overcome all of them so far. And you kind of think with a little bit more, with more of the same, she'll do the other ones too. But it's disappointing that they exist in the first place. That's kind of what I'm taking away from it. But she's sort of smashing through them. But I also wish they weren't there.
Yeah, but I think it seems like with her, the little ones are not just as important, but conquering all the smaller battles and making peace with the other difficulties gives her, like, adds to her basket of confidence about the big ones. She encounters an obstacle, she figures it out, whether it's putting toothpaste on a toothbrush or being able to be in the NCAA.
Yes. Collegiate sport. Well done. Collegiate sport. Yeah.
You the sports acronym. I don't know. I also thought it was so it was so funny how she kept talking about dark humor and her dark thoughts while being just a straight up ray of sunshine, like such a sunny person. But again, kind of made peace with both parts of herself, it seems like. Instead of thinking one is bad and one is good, she's both. She's everything.
There's a realness and authenticity to her that I think in the world of professional sports or this space is sometimes a bit rare, just because you know, you don't always see that from athletes. And obviously, with her platform, she's really open about anything and everything, and she wants you to see every aspect of her life, and she wants to share that. And I think that's really refreshing. And also, I think she's really helping, you know, she talks about wanting to use her platform to help a lot of people, and just exudes so much confidence and not at all ashamed or embarrassed in any way.
And that idea of being an influencer, which is one of the things, one of many things she can rightly refer to herself as, an influencer can be authentic. And as a dad of a young teenager, I think that's a very, very welcome, very, very positive thing. And I don't ever want to sort of make that broad point, and this is somebody who is relatively young, but look at the distance between what happened to her and now, and it's about 3 years. Losing your sight when your medical professionals were telling you, you won't lose it all yet, you know, and then suddenly it just basically going to all intents and purposes. And 3 years later, you've made a Paralympic team and you've won a gold medal and you've broken the world record. And wow. And not for the first time on this program, our guest is kind of telling and showing us how a life can be lived in all kinds of ways, which is, yeah, incredible.
It also feels like she has this amazing family pointing her in the direction of what can you do? We have a lot of things in life telling us what you can't do anymore. So we're going to find all of the things that you can do and help you do them.
Well, that's it from me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry. And join us next time for more of this.
You were coached by your husband. And I'm just intrigued what that was like.
It was horrible.
No, okay. It didn't work out well.
A lot of athlete relationships fall apart when they're coached by their partner, mainly because you take it all home. It was always very emotive and he was the opposite. So I start crying, he gets angry. So it's kind of like, oh, this is not going to work very well.
Australia's hurdle hero, Yana Pittman, is on the podium next time.